Today in our conversation corner, I want to introduce you to Gerard Reinmuth. Gerard is an architect working both in practice through his firm Terroir and in the academy as professor of practice at the University of Technology in Sydney. He's recently written about the need for generational change, for actively making space for the new generation of architects who are not, according to a lot of younger architects, getting the breaks they need to acquire experience and to influence change. There's been a lot of Twitter chat about this recently, for example, in response to a recent competition for the Australian Pavilion at the Venice Biennale. This competition has been restricted to people with built experience, which has created controversy and frustration. So, how do young architects and thinkers get a go? So let's look at this. Why should there be a changing of the guard? And if there is, will we in the process get some insight into why architecture is perceived to have lost its power to build the future? Gerard, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Often the complaint in business is that you're at a disadvantage if you're old, that our world favours the young, but this doesn't seem to be the case in architecture.
It's a very complex one, and I think, on a positive note, you could say Utzon was 38 when he won the Opera House competition. However, Utzon has been forever derided with the mistakes attributed to young architects, going over budget, going over time, and so on. But people often forget, as part of that story, the budget of the Opera House was not set by him. It was set by others before he even arrived in Australia. And then, of course, he was forever working against a sort of difficult position. So what you find is that architecture is a very, very complicated thing to do involving great amount of people. And a young architect, in many ways, will be as safe or unsafe as anyone else in the profession. The big problem is that the big criteria in architecture is previous experience, which you just mentioned, and the idea that if you haven't done it before, you can't possibly do it, which, as you say, would not have helped Mendelssohn.
No, indeed not. So today, being a young architect means you're at a disadvantage in Australia?
I think there's a very clear split. I think young architects in Australia are perhaps some of the luckiest in the world when it comes to working in private houses. We have some fabulous house clients. We have a housing industry, which obviously encourages regular renovation, as we know, from various forms of media. And young architects often do very well in that field. In fact, they continually prove in that field that with limited so-called real-life experience, they will produce masterwork after another. Where it's problematic is in our public realm. And so if you're like myself or a number of other architects in my peer group who actually want to make the city we're going to live in tomorrow, it's very, very difficult because of the way those buildings are procured.
Well, why aren't young architects getting chances or the kind of chances they want?
It's very interesting. We've opened an office in Denmark, which came out of teaching there and then just talking to people. And I had no intention to open an office, but we then all of a sudden found that we're getting asked to do things. And the largest one of those things is we're in intellectual control of and writing the brief for a $1 billion hospital. Now, a practice of our size in Australia would tend to not be allowed to work on a $1 million hospital, either lack of hospitals or whatever else. But in that culture, which does value intellect and value research capacity and value, if you like, simply the knowledge of other humans, they're able to say, okay, you're a young practice, but you've got a research capability. And in fact, they thought it was a great advantage. We'd never done a hospital before because they were sure that would be more innovative. So I think that operates in exact opposition to what happens here, where the system perpetuates itself, where previous experience is mandatory. The criteria for that are very precise. And so, of course, work tends to slosh around amongst the same four or five people. And those that break through tend to by luck or the insight of a very smart client.
There's a lot of discussion also about the privileging of men over women in architecture. At the recent Australian Institute of Architects National Conference in Melbourne, the frustration was that the profession was male-oriented with very few women. Earlier in the show, we talked about the problems Eileen Gray had as a female architect, but that was a long time ago. How do you understand the situation now?
It's a very, very complex issue. I think I've never understood the problem. I think 90% of our practice have tended to be women for a very, very long time. So, and that's not strategic. It's just happened that way. So when I hear this debate, I always try to think about and understand what it's about. And I think there are a couple of issues. One is historically, architecture, you could say, is a fairly macho pursuit because part of it involves running around on building sites and so on. And thankfully, that's changed at a sort of social, cultural level. That's no longer such a prohibitive issue. I think the main issue still is work-life balance. And by that, I mean that architects famously and you might say heroically or anti-heroically work extraordinary hours. And to maintain a sort of balanced life and do that is very difficult. And I think in this culture, that's particularly difficult. So to refer to the Danish example again, I don't have a single female friend who's my age, 40, who's not working full-time or 80%, because it's simply understood that that's your right to do that. Therefore, in architecture offices in Scandinavia, it's 50-50 women. Whereas here, there are a number of issues, even our, until recently, lack of maternity pay and so on, that just prohibit having two people both working at the same time. And given the hours an architect puts in, you do see a steady decline of women 5 years after graduation. What's good is it's been seen, as you've noted. It's at a recent Institute of Architects conference, and actually one of my colleagues, Tasha Finney, is running at UTS a couple of symposia this semester on practice and procreation, actually understanding it's not necessarily a women's issue, it's a family issue and or a society issue, and so we're constantly working at it. Yeah.
You're working on ideas that are about the future, and you've said that this manifests itself nowhere more potently than in our cities. But you remark that the idea of cities has changed in the last 20 years around their economics and management, and this has challenged the architecture profession. Can you talk about this a bit?
Yeah, this is quite an interesting one. There's basically now a managerial approach to making cities. And another UTS colleague, Martin Kornberger at the business school, has pointed it out in various papers that cities now will compete. They compete to be the best city or the top city or the second most top city in the world. And as you see, these statistics are regularly cited. And of course, what they're doing therefore is getting those awards on ranking tables, often set up by MasterCard or other large corporate entities. So there's a process now of engaging consultants to help reposition themselves. And so what this means is you have often all sorts of consultants with various titles working to advise management of cities about how to get further up these tables. One of the problems is that, of course, these tables are effectively for high-ranking young professionals. You know, where does Google put all its people? So one of the dilemmas we're seeing, I think the London riots is an extremely interesting example of that. We've actually got incredibly dissatisfied sectors of the community in a city that would be considered a top livable city in many other ways because there's this management approach. And so what that's meant is a lot of people are now involved in making of the city. And I think architects have been slow to adapt and slow to take part in those conversations. And I think, thankfully, they're now starting to more, because what is always continually forgotten is the only people that can actually spatialise, i.e. understand how all this talking results in a thing, a form, a city, is an architect. And so I think to leave them off the table is a critical mistake.
On ABC Radio National, you're with By Design, and in our conversation corner, I'm talking to Gerard Reinmuth, who's both a practicing architect through his firm Terroir and an academic as professor of practice at the University of Technology in Sydney. You say that, Gerard, that the only people who know about producing the actual thing are architects, but have they actually been dumped as central players at the table of planning and developing cities?
Yeah, I think particularly what happened, in fact, the two people you referred to in some ways are part of a trend in the last century in your previous interview, Le Corbusier and Eileen Gray, is architects, with changes in the economy a century ago, architects started making lots of houses and lots of individual buildings. And before that, architects were understood as city makers, working with the mayor or people in charge of the city to make the city. So I think architects in part have dumped themselves historically, and I think there's now a strong group working to get back into and focus on city making. And at the same time, as I said, we've got this management approach to making cities that often seems to be more focused on rankings and ratings rather than actually making very good spaces for a complex and diverse community.
Now, people think of architecture in the way in which you have just talked about it as about building, about design, but I wonder whether that's right. Is there, in the new generation, a set of skills that we need to talk about more, and in doing so, to get the right people onto the job of shaping our cities?
Absolutely. And this has certainly been my European experience, where various complex problems, from planning a city to planning theatre programmes to planning a hospital in the case that we're working on, it's understood that architects have a very particular training which allows them to synthesise extremely complex sets of information and come up with a sort of strategic idea, often it's called the concept in a building, which might carry that complex set of information. And so I think me and others, Aaron Betsky, who you've had on the programme before, are talking a lot about the idea that let's not say architecture is buildings. Buildings are actually just buildings. Architecture is a very complex professional endeavour. It's an intellectual activity, and that intellectual activity can be played out at many points in the city. One of those points might be making buildings. And I think as our cities develop in the future, I think that understanding will help reposition architects in the position of influence they should have if we're to make better cities.
And do you think the older generation of architects are just thinking about buildings and they're not thinking in quite the strategic way that you think is necessary?
I actually think generationally that's correct. I think certainly, as I noted before, one issue which blights a city like Sydney is a procurement system which relies on previous experience. So you get the same work or a body of work going round and round the same people. And, you know, as you know, any geneticist will tell you that's not a good thing that should happen. So I think what I'm interested in is a more diverse group working to make the city, and that can only be a good thing for the future.
And just very briefly in our last minute, your new job is Professor of Practice. What is a Professor of Practice?
I think we just did it in the last 10 minutes. What UTS is a very dynamic institution at the moment in terms of the Faculty of Design, Architecture and Building, which is why I was happy to join as Professor of Practice. And what they've said is, okay, we're interested as an institution in having a greater impact on the city. One thing we need to do is rethink practice. Are architects doing just buildings, as you said, or are we doing many other things as well? And so they've created this position, the Professor of Practice, to think through and advocate these ideas, which I'm very pleased to do.
Gerard Reinmuth, Professor of Practice at UTS, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Links on our website, which is where you'll also see an essay that triggered this By Design conversation. It's by Gerard and it's titled Building the Future with the Next Generation of Architects.